on, it's Christmas, isn't it? Right, before Andy Granger gets it, because he's the best quiz person in the world, what was that the theme tune for? Yeah, can we have the first slide up, if it's about? One of my favourite actors. Love his genre of films. But what on earth has that got to do with Christmas? Well, we're used to Christmas, the Christmas idea of the good, are we not? Christmas cake. lovely food. A great time, joy and happiness and so on. But actually, when you look into the Christmas story, there is a whole panacea of things going on. And there is certainly the good, but there's also very much the good and the ugly. The bad and the ugly. I've said the good. There's the bad and the ugly. As is illustrated by this next slide, I don't know if this will come up. Does anybody know, this is a bit of the bad and the ugly. Anybody know what this scene is depicting? It's a Christmas scene. The slaughter or the massacre of the innocents. This was painted by the famous 16th century Peter Rubens. As I was preparing this, I just thought, how relevant is the message in the church that we bring to our nation and the world? In that Jesus came into a situation of violence, of slaughter of the innocents. He narrowly escaped by the skin of his teeth. But all over the world, over the last few years, there's been these incredibly awful stories of the slaughter of the innocents, and it continues, doesn't it? It just reminded me how relevant the message of Jesus is. He went through all that and came out and actually was slaughtered himself and rose from the dead so that we could be forgiven and we have a wonderful message to give our neighbours and friends this Christmas. So the Christmas story is the good, but it's the bad and the ugly as well. What I want to just do this morning is go, next slide if I may, go that, off the beaten track a bit. We're used to Jesus in the manger, the angels, the wise men, the frankincense, the myrrh, and what's the other one? Gold. That's correct. Liz said I was losing my mind, and there we are. off the beaten track at Christmas, and look at one or two things that perhaps are not very well or very often spoken about. Have you ever heard a message on the massacre of the innocents at Christmas? I'm not talking about that. but what I do want to talk about is this. And that is, maybe not. Is it a picture next? Don't go to it. Right, go to it then. No, don't go to the picture yet. That. I'd like to talk to you about that. One likely lad, and four, I'd like to put a very in there. Very unlikely lasses. Now, you know what the likely lads are, if you're old enough, like me, in the 70s, the sitcom. Well, it's not that kind of a likely lad, actually. But if we get time, we'll get on to that. But I'd love to go ladies first. Would that be okay, ladies? We have been looking about how Jesus elevates the position of women back to where it should be, of equal importance in the eyes of God as men. So I want to look at one likely lad and four unlikely lasses. But we'll go ladies first. So four unlikely lasses. What the heck am I talking about? Well, I'd like to say, in Matthew's Gospel, the first of the four Gospels, there is a genealogy, that is an ancestral list of the people, so-and-so begat so-and-so, who begat so-and-so. When I'm reading the Bible, I always skip it and just get on to the better bit, you know, a bit later on. If you go to Luke's Gospel, there is a similar genealogy, so-and-so begat so-and-so, begat so-and-so, 76 men mentioned, not a single woman, but I'm sure you'll agree with me that actually women had a very prominent part in giving birth to any offspring. Would you agree? But because of the male bias at the time, they were not thought of as important enough to mention. However, if we go back to Matthew in these first verses of the opening chapter, Matthew puts in four women. Wow. Why would he do that? Especially with the low esteem that women have. I want to look at that. And for the first reason that they're unlikely is simply because they are women and shouldn't be there for that reason. But another reason is that they were probably all Gentiles. Do you know what a Gentile is when it's at home? A non-Jew. So not a member of the chosen people of God at that time. They were probably all Gentiles, non-Jews. And lastly, and almost more incredibly than any, when you think of the line of people that led up to the Son of God, the King of Kings, the Lord of Lords, that in those few verses in the opening chapter of Matthew, he puts in four women who are of disputable character, shall we say, colourful in their behaviour, to say the least, at times. Ungodly, unholy women, non-Jews, in the holy line leading to Joseph and Mary and Jesus, the Son of God himself. So they're very unlikely to be there, but they are. What I want to do is just go through each one very briefly and bring out a few points. And if we've got time, get on to the likely lad. Okay? So the first one to be mentioned, first woman, first lady, may I say, in Matthew to be mentioned, she's the first woman in the New Testament, is a woman called Tamar. And Tamar, slightly risque picture, hope you don't mind, but we are an adult audience. It will come into its own in a minute. Tamar basically was denied justice by her father-in-law, a man called Judah. And it was her right, according to Jewish law, to be able to marry her dead husband's younger brother. But Judah refused her this right. So, a bit like Baldric, she came up with a cunning plan. There's no other way for her to get her rights. Anyway, she disguised herself as a prostitute. And when her father-in-law, Judah, passed her by on the road, he approached her for business. And she agreed, but first obtained his staff and signet ring as a guarantee of payment that would later be coming to her. Well, she became pregnant from Judah, and when he found out, he was absolutely furious and had in mind to drag her out into the street and have her burnt alive. Because she had the audacity to do that outside of marriage. But she quickly sent a message to Judah saying that she was pregnant by the man who owned this staff and this signet ring. And it was, of course, Judah's staff and Judah's signet ring. So, by a bit of daring, she showed her father-in-law up to be, well, how he was acting as a hypocrite. And he was as liable as she was under Jewish law to be stoned to death. It wasn't just the woman, it would be the man as well by law. But I mean, on the positive side, she succeeded in making her point very powerfully. She showed initiative, she showed courage in the face of injustice. And that's a positive thing. But the fact remains, she did resort to deception and prostitution to get away. But nevertheless, Matthew includes her in the list the holy line of Jesus' ancestors. I find that quite amazing. I think one of the points from this is that the unlikely, the ill-treated, the downtrodden, those who have had injustices committed against them, God has a heart for those people and desires to set them free. Another thing is that she faced a bad situation and it was turned around. And the other point I want to make is that you may be in a bad situation today in your life in some way. Could be chained, as we heard earlier. But our God is a God who breaks chains. Our God is a God who can completely turn around a negative situation in your life. He can give you the keys. He can give you the wherewithal to change a situation and turn it upside down, 180 degree turnaround. I do believe there are some people in this room who, before the year is out, your situation will have been 180 degrees turnaround. You'll be going in that direction, but then you'll be going in that direction. That direction is the direction you want to go in. It's the direction of freedom and liberty that God will bring for you as we trust in him. And one last thing on this. She showed initiative at any rate. She showed initiative. She did something about it. And you in your situation can do something about your situation. But make a good choice. Make a good choice. I think it comes... Oh, that's it. All those... Here's one of the best choices you can make. And Joe came out and shared with us a bit about that. That all those who call on the name of the Lord shall be saved. All those who seek God truly in their heart. I've never seen the righteous forsaken or their offspring begging bread. He'll come to you as we call on his name. Whatever your situation, whatever needs to happen in your life. That's the first lady, Tamar. Second one that Matthew includes is in verse 3. I'll just read it. I meant to read the other one, but didn't. Verse 3, Salmon, the father of Boaz, whose mother was Rahab. Now then, Rahab. Now she didn't just resort to immoral activity when her back was against the wall, when she had to, but she was a professional. That was her job. She was a prostitute. She was also a native inhabitant of the land of Canaan that God had said he was going to give to his people. And what she did, what was to her credit, was that she made some really, really wise choices in her life. She hid the Israeli scouts who were spying out the land that the Lord had promised them, and she hid them on the roof there. And some of the choices that she made, number one, she feared God. She said, I know that the Lord has given you this land, talking to the spies, and a great fear of you has fallen on us, so that all who live in the country are melting in fear because of you. She feared God. I mean, death and destruction were around the corner. It really sharpens your mind. I wish in our country we had more fear of God. We've argued God away by saying we just evolved from nothing. So there's no God to fear anymore, so just live like you like. You know, what a shame. Big deception. There is a day of judgment coming on all people, and we need to be ready for that. But she feared God, to her credit. Next thing, she put a trust in God's people. Now then, she says, please swear to me by the Lord that you'll show kindness to my family, because I have shown kindness to you. Spare our lives and save us from death. And she trusted these Israeli scouts to keep their word, because they said to her, now this oath you made us swear will not be binding on us unless you've tied this scarlet cord in the window through which you let us down. And she let them down the wall. Oh, it's gone. Well, anyway, you saw there was a wall with a scarlet. Oh, thank you. Thank you. Scarlet robe. And when the army approached, they saw that scarlet cord and they spared her and her family. She made some wise choices. She feared God. She put her trust in God's people. She identified with God's people. And the cord going down the wall was like nailing her colours to the mast. I am part of this. Do you remember the story a few months ago? The Islamic State were pillaging and assassinating people and so on. And they captured about 30 Coptic Christians in North Africa. And as they were kneeling down for their heads to be severed, one by one, they said, "What do you believe?" They said, "Jesus Christ is Lord." Off with the head. Came to one. He said, "What do you believe?" And he wasn't a Christian. He says, "I believe in their God." Probably wouldn't have saved him. But I think that statement saved him. But she nailed her colours to the mast. And there came a point in my life where I nailed my colours to the mast. I had to make a decision, you see. You can be on the fence, you can be looking, but at some point, for it to become real to you, you have to make a decision. You have to nail your colours to the mast. It was wonderful. I loved last week's baptism. Such sincerity. Wonderful testimonies, stories of how people became Christians. Loved it. They'd nailed their colours to the mast. And doing it willingly because they knew it was right and they just went through with it. It was wonderful. Nailed her colours to the mast, did Rahab, and it saved her and her family. Are you saved? Are you saved? Are you? Third one. First was Tamar. The second was Rahab. Third woman. Remember, these people. Listen. How great would it be if you found that you were of royal descent? How chuffed would you feel? How chuffed do you think it is for someone to feel if they're actually a descendant, someone that leads to the Son of God, the Messiah, the Son of God? What an honour. These people were brought from nothing to a place of wonderful status and honour in their lives. What an amazing thing. Is that what God thinks of them? Yeah, it is. You can be a nobody and nothing. You can have done all sorts of wrong things. But God can take you and make you something completely outside of yourself. Nothing to do with you. Why? It's called the grace of God. Next person, Ruth. Now, well, we talked about the good, bad and the ugly. I don't know if these... I don't think any of these women are ugly, actually. I'm sure they're all crackers. But, you know what I mean. Good looking. But Ruth was a goodie as well. She was probably about the only naturally good one, in the story. And what's the story here? Well, the story of Ruth is of an Israeli family, a mum and a dad, Ruth not being one of these, but a mum and a dad and two sons. And they fall on hard times due to a famine and move to the nearby country of Moab. And there, both sons marry Moabite women, one of which is Ruth. Both sons die, and also the father dies. So they've fled trouble and got even more. So Naomi, the mum, she decides cut her losses and return to Israel. And she urges her daughters, one of which is Ruth, to stay behind. Stay in your own country. You're young enough. Marry some good men around here. You'll be all right. And one goes, but the other, Ruth. And I love that picture. I love that picture. To me, sums up this word faithful. But she stays. She won't let go of her. She clings to her, the Bible says. I love it. It just summarizes. When you're a Christian, you stay one. You don't give up. No matter what you go through, you stay faithful. We heard about that today, this morning. And Ruth makes this famous statement. I'm going to stay with you and your people will be my people. Your God is going to be my God. The thing I find remarkable about this is this was not a natural mum. It was a mother-in-law. Mother-in-law. And she was faithful. Didn't have to be. Probably the best chance for her was to stay where she was and marry one of her own people. Spoke the same language, same culture. But because of a bond, of faithfulness, she went to a potentially more difficult place. And of course, in Bethlehem, she meets her kinsman redeemer, who she marries. Someone who she can marry to continue the line, like Tamar's father-in-law, Judah, was meant to let his son marry Tamar. But actually, Ruth went back to Bethlehem and did find a man called Boaz, a good man. And she has a child called Obed, and he's the father of Jesse, and from Jesse comes David, the greatest king and greatest military ruler ever of Israel, from whom comes the Christ. Incredible. A non-Jew. A nobody. No hope. No chance. The line, royal line, the line of God's royal line. As high as you can get. And I think the point is God puts great value on being faithful, doesn't he? One of the recurring statements of the Bible is God is faithful in all his ways. And you need to know that. If you're going through difficult things, I want you to know God's faithful. He's faithful. And he'll never let you down. No matter what happens. But this faithfulness was coming through from Ruth. I'm going to stick with you, mum-in-law. I'm going to stick with you, no matter what. Job says when he was going through some difficult times in the Old Testament, Job says, though he slay me, yet will I trust in him. So don't be tempted to throw the towel in or give up. Don't give up. No. The future is bright. The best is yet to come. God has good things for you. Plans to give you hope and a future. Some people need to hear that. Plans to give you hope and a future. Good things for you. Do you believe that? And the fourth one. The fourth one. We've had Tamar, resourceful. We've had Rahab, made good choices. Feared God. Good choices. We've got Ruth, faithful. And the last one in the line that Matthew purposefully includes, Luke leaves them out. Bathsheba. Okay, so anybody know who we go, Andy? Bet you don't know that actress. Or anybody? Does she go by Susan Hayward then? I got here. That's supposed to be Susan Hayward. Oh, right. My apologies. Right, you're right then. Hooray. You're right. You got it right. Rita Hayward. Yeah. Anyway, right. Okay, I'll check the jolly Google. The 1951 best film of the year, that was. David and Bathsheba, best film of the year. And starring with Gregory Peck, and there she is as the sultry-looking Bathsheba, which is, a very apt image. If you don't know, the woman David, King David, coming down the line now, getting closer to Jesus, the woman David famously sinned with and broke four of the Ten Commandments in one foul swoop, including adultery and murder, that one. And do you know what? I've only ever heard, and this is kind of being against the trend, because I've been building women up all the time. But just on this one, I just want to bring out another side to things, because I've only ever heard people talk about David being 110% responsible for this. And he's totally responsible and totally guilty. There's no doubt about that. But I tell you what, she was a bit of a one herself, you know, Bathsheba. Because let me just tell you the story. So one evening, David's on the balcony of his palace, quite high up, being a king, palace, high up, and he saw this beautiful naked woman bathing. Well, what on earth is she doing being naked? Middle East women are very, very reserved and cover themselves up. And all the houses are very close together at that time, not much room. And so she'd just be almost down below. And she's there, you know, bathing. She would have been well aware of her proximity to the king. And I think reading between the lines probably had a thought, do you know what? I'm only married to a Hittite soldier. got the king next door. Maybe there's an opportunity here for me to advance myself. And anyway, David, of course, can't resist the temptation. And he calls for her and Julie, you know. And then, of course, the bad news comes that she's pregnant. And David goes into damage limitation mode. And comes up with his own cunning and dastardly plan to have her husband, Uriah the Hittite, killed in battle, which he manages to do. Of course, God is very, very unhappy, and it's clear in the Bible he's deeply unhappy with David's behaviour. And there follow a series of judgments of God upon not just David, but the whole kingdom. And, you know, thousands of people die. And the later breakup of the kingdom can be traced back to this event. God spares David's life because he sincerely repents. And you can read all about that in Psalm 51. It's interesting, you know, Matthew can't even bear to call her by that name. He calls her, in the genealogies in Matthew, the wife of Uriah. He didn't like her because he thought she was a bit of a one, to be honest. And so David was culpable completely. But she had a bit to play in it as well. Now, Matthew still includes her as one of the four women in Jesus' ancestral line. All women, all non-Jews, three of them displaying unsavory characteristics. And I just want to boil this down to us, you see, because whether it's in a immoral sexual way or if it's something else, you know, you may see yourself as a bit of a one, be a man or a woman, boy or a girl. Maybe you've caused others, either intentionally or not intentionally, harm and bad things to happen. You could have a chain of guilt around you today because of things that maybe you've done either willfully or just by chance, not willfully, but they happened and you've upset people, you've caused problems, damage to people here today. Well, this was Bathsheba. She was just going with the flow. She was just taking an opportunity. Nothing meant by it. We know that. And we all do things like that in our lives. Every one of us. All of us. No exception, apart from Jesus. But the thing is, this woman, this bit of a one, if you like, this opportunist, she was forgiven completely by God and brought back. And she became the mother of the next king, Solomon, also one of the greatest kings of Israel, known for his wisdom. She was brought back. Not only that, included in the lineage leading up to the Christ. So what about you? What does that mean for you and me? It means that whatever you've done, wherever you come from, whatever your background, there is forgiveness for you and acceptance for you. So don't ever say, oh, do you know, see, some people come to church and they think, you know, I don't even know why I'm here. I'm not worthy. You don't know what I've been thinking, what I've been doing. Yeah, but look, that's not the issue. Somebody said it's the direction you're facing. It's not what you've done. It's are you serious about going on with God? Do you want to be forgiven? Do you want a new life? Do you want to have power to live in a different way? Then if so, that's all that matters. It doesn't matter about the past. All that matters is the future. I'd have loved to talk about a likely lad, but I don't want to. I think I should stop there and just summarise this. So here were. I do prefer my method of just throwing bits of paper on the floor and then on top of all this. But anyway, here we have four very unlikely women, lasses. But they were included in the royal line of the King of Kings and Lord of Lords. And just in closing, can we sing again? But in closing, what I would like to do is just put these things out to you. Could be here, could be you're here today and you want to be like Rahab. You want to nail your colours to the mast, so to speak. You want to say, well, I want to be identified with you lot. I want to be a Christian. I want this to be a reality for me. It could be that you yourself feel weighed down with a sense of guilt and failing in your life. And I want to pray for you as well. So, I think I'll just pray now and then we'll just sing a song to close if that's okay. So, Heavenly Father, I just want to thank you that you are such a good God. You're gracious and compassionate. You're slow to anger and abounding in love and faithfulness, Lord. And Lord, I just come to you this morning for us in this room, Lord. And I pray, Lord, for any here who are saying, well, yeah, you know, I'd really like to get more into this, but I don't know really how and I'm unsure about things. And I just pray for people like that this morning. I just pray that you will encourage them and help them on the way. And Lord, I just pray also for anyone here who feels weighed down with a sense of guilt and a sense of, well, I've really bodged things up one way or another. Lord, will you forgive me for the things I've done even this week? The things I've done in the past, and I'm conscious that I have hurt people. I'm conscious that because of my careless acts, I've left a trail of devastation. Oh God, will you forgive me? And the answer to that is yes, I will. Yes, I will.